This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
The Volume.
No! Oh my God! How could he do that?
Are you on
donate your
What?
Charles Darwin.
The nerds is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brever, and alongside me is Logan Camden. And today, you already know the deal. We are going to be breaking down the NBA action that we just saw, starting with by far the game of the day, Logan, as the Philadelphia 76ers snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. They stay alive in this series, take this thing home now heading into game six, and they do it on the back of an incredibly clutch Tyrese Maxey performance, who delivers 46 points, Logan, including 7 in the last 27 seconds of regulation. What does this performance say to you about him and the level that he's at right now and what that means for Philly?
I mean, he's a superstar, man. Tyrese has got that superstar skill set, dude, and he has been the best offensive player in this series thus far for either team. I mean, the most consistent, too. On the series, he's 32 points, 5 rebounds, and 7 assists on 40% from the field, 43% from behind the arc, with a true shooting of 62%. Carson, in this game, you mentioned 46 points, 9 assists on 68% true shooting, 7 of 12 from behind the arc. And you couldn't ask for bigger stakes in this game. I mean, this is back against the wall, do or die, Sixers season on the line. Like, it's effectively over if Maxey doesn't do this thing, man. Maxey hits that clutch 4-point play where I thought it was foolish. I mean, I'm letting the guy shoot the three. You know what I mean? I'm not even trying to get up in his airspace like that at all. But then he hits that clutch deep three from the logo where you just felt like he was going in, man. Maxey had that hot hand all game long, and that's a good shot for him, man. He is a special shooter, man. Like, that distance for him is, it's a tough shot for anybody, but Maxey can hit that. You know what I mean? Like, he is one of those kind of shooters where that's not a bad three for him. In overtime, man, he hits a tough step-back three that is just super clutch. It's superhuman stuff that we're seeing from Tyrese Maxey, man. And with the level that we've gotten from Joel Embiid in this series thus far, like, they needed it. And they survive a pretty bad Joel Embiid game. Maxey carried them, man. Maxey carried them through, and he's carried them through the majority of this series. Like, he's been the best player on the Sixers thus far, and he's been the best offensive player in this series, point-blank period, man. He's a superstar in the making, man, and this was a superstar performance. As this series, man, Maxey's done superhuman stuff damn near every single game.
He's been so, so good, so consistently, and I believe you said he's 40% from the field. He's 50% on the field from this series, so he's been exceptionally efficient on top of this crazy volume, and he's just unguardable when his pull-up jumper is falling like this. And there was a weirdly extended stretch this year, especially when Joel Embiid was out, that Maxey was struggling as a pull-up shooter. And so his efficiency there was actually towards the bottom of like the highest volume pull-up shooters in the league, which is just an outlier considering how well he shot the ball over the course of his career. But it has been going in this series. And when it is going like that, the guy is just unguardable because he's one of the quickest downhill guards in the league. He is one of the truest three-level scorers that we have, especially with that lethal floater game. And you see all of that in this game. The ball handling is exceptional. The footwork, he has a super impressive scoop finish. And when he rejects those screens, like, he is just so quick. He's by you in a second. We have, I believe, the two most prolific screen rejectors in the NBA facing off in this series with him and Brunson. And that speed is just really, really tough to deal with. And then the shooting was exceptional. Like, whenever they dug on Embiid post-ups, and it was Maxey who was one pass away, he was shot ready. He made three triples like that. And then in the fourth quarter, you have, of course, the four-point play and the logo three, as you mentioned. But you also have a tough and one floater just a minute before that, although he doesn't make the free throw. And he does miss a few free throws down the stretch that if he had made, the Sixers would have won this game in regulation. But this is a phenomenal breakthrough series from him. And this is a guy who I have been extremely high on forever. I've said it a million times, but I'm going to keep bragging about it. I said he was the most skilled scoring prospect in the 2020 draft, and he went 21st overall. Look at him now. The guy's an absolute stud, and we've seen him deliver. Last year, he was really good in this playoff stage, but that was in a different role, obviously. That was more spotting up and selective attacking and transition, and he's still great at those things, but now he's your lead guard. And he's not just your lead guard, Logan. He's your best offensive player over the course of this series. Like, of course, game three, Embiid explodes. But Maxey has been by far the most consistent source of offense. And in this game, down the stretch, when Embiid is struggling to make reads and he is losing the ball and he just doesn't seem comfortable whatsoever and he's not making his jumpers, Tyrese Maxey gives you the sort of unbelievable clutch shot making that you need to save your season. Like, this season was about to go up in flames like too many Philly seasons have in recent memory. And it was going to be everybody shit on Embiid because, of course, he's hurt, but he was bad offensively in this game. He had 9 turnovers. He could have had 12. He was 7 of 19 from the field. He, again, was a non-factor offensively in the fourth quarter. Honestly, the turnovers, he had 4 of them, made him damn near a negative because, again, he's not scoring the basketball late in these games. And Maxey just puts the city on his back, dude. It was incredible. And he played 52 minutes in this game. So what we're looking at over a 5-game sample against a really, really good team defense with really good point of attack defenders. Like, that is just a star-making sort of series to me. And that's the biggest takeaway that Philly has. Embiid has struggled with some of the same stuff that he always has. And that's really disappointing. But you do know that he's dealing with the injury right now. Your supporting cast, Kelly Oubre, has been playing really well. Obviously, you're going to have to confront the issue that you're not going to get him back on a minimum deal. Tobias Harris is Tobias Harris. This was his best game so far. But, like, the foundational piece that Tyrese Maxey is, to me, is undeniable right now. This guy is a number two on a title team. If your number one plays up to his potential, and if you use some of the remaining assets that you have, what you got through the Harden trade, to put the best supporting cast that you can around them. And that's the biggest thing that Philly could take away from this year. You're not going to win the title. You weren't going to win the title immediately post-Harden trade, and especially with Embiid in this injured state. The most valuable thing you could learn is that Maxey is, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that guy, and that's what he's proven.
He is that guy, man. I do want to focus in on Embiid for a little bit, where I was really disappointed with him in this game, man. He completely under-delivers on this stage again. In this series, the counting numbers aren't bad. They're a little boosted by his 50-point game. 32 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists on 44% from the field, 32% from deep, with a true shooting of 58%. He's got 4 turnovers a game on the series. And in this one, 19 points, 16 boards, 10 assists with 9 turnovers. And he could just be so much better. That's my takeaway. Like, he just wastes so many possessions, man. Embiid leaves me wanting so much more from him. Just foolish passes where he's throwing passes away, man. Errant ones, out of bounds. And like you mentioned, dude, significantly, Embiid is constantly struggling with double teams. Excuse me, man. Like, he's doubled in the corner on this one possession near the baseline, and he tries to kick it to Batum. Out of bounds. Like, just a bad kick. And he's always been able, you know, he's always struggled with doubles. Some games are better than others. This one was noticeably bad. But the other thing that really aggravates me about Embiid's game is how stagnant some of his possessions are. You know what I mean? With the Knicks and these other teams, there's really good flowing offense, and there's a lot of ball movement, and they get their teammates involved. And even if it's not directly going to a guy where they're setting up a shot, it's something that's setting up a play on the backside where there's an Embiid handoff or, you know, a screen or something that he could do just to get the offense going a little bit. A lot of Embiid possessions are he's going to catch the ball and he's just going to stand there in triple threat for 10-plus seconds. And there's a shot clock violation in this one where I'm like, you know, Embiid, what are we doing? Can we move the ball? Can we get the defense in rotation? And the result is the offense is just standing there in place. There's no movement. And a result of a lot of these possessions is a tough jumper that Embiid is most likely going to miss. And I thought he had an answer for when his jump shot was failing him in this one. He turned to his post game. But they were in situations where I thought it didn't make sense. That's what's so frustrating to me about Embiid. Carson, there's this one possession late in this game where he gets Josh Hart on him at the right elbow, and he's facing up on him. And Hart knocks the ball out of his hands. He re-catches it, and he takes another jumper. And that's a scenario where I thought, okay, Embiid, use your body, back Hart down, go down to the low block, and just body him and get an easy baby hook, get an easy post fade, or kick it back out to somebody. And then later in this game, he tries to back down a guy like Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein, and he's getting walled off. And specifically late, Robinson pokes that ball loose, and it's a turnover. Like, I just think Embiid he's got all the tools, the elite jump shooting, the elite pull-up jump shooting, the size, the strength, the touch, the handle, the game. It's about him putting it all to, and I, like you mentioned, man, I know he's hurt too, but it's about him putting all this together. And the one thing that I won't excuse when Embiid is hurt is his decision-making and absolutely how he's consciously playing the game and making decisions. And that is where Embiid has consistently let me down. Like with this guy, it's not a question of talent. It's a question of, is he going to make the right decisions? Is he going to attack the right when he should? Is he going to create the easiest offense for Philadelphia? And a lot of times the answer is no, where it's, again, early shot clock shots, stagnant possessions, and turnovers. And that's where Embiid leaves me wanting a lot more. The one area I will give Embiid a lot of credit is him being a great rim protector and deterrent. Even the very brief moment where he's off the court, the Knicks spread open the floor, and Jalen Brunson attacks a wide-open paint with Batum at the five. You just got to have Embiid out there. He is such a good guy at clogging it up, mucking it up, making it nasty, and deterring him. He's got five blocks in this one. He's got a big block on Isaiah Hartenstein. Although I will say late, he does get blown by Jalen Brunson a few possessions where I'm like, you're 7 feet, man. You should be stuffing that shot. Just get back. I know he's not at 100%. We've said this every single show, but again, the turnovers, the decision-making, the consciously, like, I just know that Embiid, man, if he was consciously locked in a little more and making better decisions and playing a different style, he could be so much more of a effective offensive player, man. He leaves me wanting a lot more, man, a lot to be desired. They survive a bad Joel Embiid game, man, and that's all credit to Tyrese Maxey. And I know his counting numbers are good and stuff, and I know he's hurt, but I still want more from Joel Embiid, man. With the level that he's at, like, maybe the Knicks or maybe the Sixers should be done with this series. They should at least be leading. You know what I mean? And I know the Knicks steal a close one, and they get this, you know, the Sixers pull this one out. But if Embiid was playing the way we expect Joel Embiid to, I think the 76ers have already won this series, and they would at least be leading in this one.
I've been super critical of Embiid's postseason shortcomings over the years. And I've said this year I will not be as hard on him because I think this is the most significant injury that he's had. He's been banged up in previous seasons, but being this shortly removed from meniscus surgery, I thought that the fact that he was able to drop 50 in game three, for example, on the knee, like, he's clearly more hampered by it than he has been by any of these injuries in year past. And that was a really impressive performance, but I just don't know how many times you can watch the same movie over and over again and not be extremely disappointed by it, because you hit on a key point, Logan. When you're not all there physically, there's a lot of things that I will give you the benefit of the doubt on. The one that I can't is decision-making. There's nothing physically taxing about consistently making the right reads and making accurate passes. And I know that Embiid gets his 10 assists in this game, and he makes some basic kickouts against Diggs. He hit Maxey on a cut once, which was nice. He made a swing pass to Tobias Harris for three, and he is better there. There's no question he is better there. And we gave him props for that throughout this regular season. This is a man who in every previous playoff run of his career average more turnovers than assists. He has been a catastrophically bad playmaker in these playoff situations. We saw the Brooklyn Nets, who physically didn't have anybody who could guard him in single coverage, but they were just able to pester him with these long, rangy wings and aggressive doubles and force him into turnover after turnover. This year's been better. He's up at 6.4 assists per game in this series, but the turnovers, again, are really, really bad in this one, and he's just not good enough as a decision maker. When you can double a guy this consistently, a player of Joel Embiid's caliber, who in the regular season gives you 35 a night with extreme efficiency, and you know that he is going to be questionable as a decision maker, and you're able to get the ball out of his hands without him creating real advantages consistently, like, that's just such a win for the defense. And there is some awful, awful moments in this one. And also just the ball security outside of some of these bad passes. I mean, there's one where he's isolating, and then just like late shot clock, he just tries to swing it to Tyrese Maxey, and he just totally is off target. But either way, like, that's a terrible possession. He misses Tobias Harris on a cut, is just way off target, but he got stripped about 20 times in this game. And I legitimately think he's expecting a whistle on like half of those. And this is, again, the downside of playing a style where you are constantly expecting the benefit of the doubt with the whistle. Like, Joel Embiid is not built to play through contact. Joel Embiid is built to hunt contact, to do whatever he can to draw a foul, and then play his way to the line. And that's what we saw in that third quarter in game four, as an example. That's what he found a lot of success with on top of legitimately great shot making in game three. And he doesn't get rewarded for that in this one. Mitchell Robinson was phenomenal on him, just consistently was poking that ball out. And he's so big and so strong, and his feet are so good, and his hands are so active. He's just like the perfect counter to Joel Embiid defensively. He wasn't letting him cleanly complete catches. Like, with his back to the basket, Isaiah Hartenstein pokes out that ball, and Embiid isn't aggressive enough coming to the ball. And that's where you're just like, dude, you have to bring more energy. And he looked gassed down the stretch, and he's not in the best condition, clearly. But still, man, this is your season on the line. Your season. And you are sitting here wasting possessions as your teammate is saving your ass. It's just so disappointing. And they weren't on the same page in this game. There are multiple possessions where both of them, like, there's one instance where Maxey throws the ball to where Embiid just is not. And Embiid does the same thing with Maxey. It was just a brutal, brutal game, especially in terms of taking care of the ball. He just has to be a much better decision maker than this. And legitimately, like, if the Knicks are able to grab a loose ball, he got stripped three times on one possession by Mitchell Robinson. And it ends up being that ball just goes up in the air. Maxey grabs it, drives, finds Kelly Oubre in the dunker spot, and they get a bucket out of that. You don't get a bailout like that. Like, you aren't still alive in this game. Like, legitimately, this game could have been uglier on the turnover front from Embiid. And his jumper's just not falling. And that's been the consistent trend in these postseason breakdowns from him. The decision-making failing, the health failing, the jump shot failing, and him not getting the same whistle. And he didn't get the same whistle in this game that he did in games three and four. So it's all the bad stuff coming to surface. You can't be surprised, because it's happened time after time after time. In fact, it's never not happened over a playoff run. And even though he is injured, and the Knicks are a really good defensive team, and they're pesky, and Robinson is a really good option to hold up against him physically, it's still disappointing when this is a guy we consider a top five player on the planet, who some people have tried to argue is the best player on the planet. And he just has no argument, no argument. The consistency with which he's declined on this stage is so disappointing. And it comes down to, when we're talking about his scoring diet, shot making. Because, yeah, he can get to the line. He has never been a good shot maker in the postseason. And this year is more the same. His effective field goal percentage is under 49 in this series. League average in the regular season was 55, bro. He's below league average every year when he gets to this stage. And his shot diet is just so predictable. He's not going to like that hang dribble pull-up that we know can be so effective. He was resorting to these back-to-the-basket possessions. But against Mitchell Robinson, like, that's not effective, and that's not Embiid's game. Embiid's game isn't getting to his hook shot, right? You don't see him shoot a lot of hooks. You see him get to that face-up jumper, and none of it is falling. It's just really, really rough, dude. And when he particularly melts down in the clutch like this in consecutive games, 0 points in the fourth quarter, zero made field goals in the fourth quarter of game four. And in this game, he only has 2 points in the fourth quarter, and then he gets himself the and one in overtime, but he's only there because Maxey played out of his mind down the stretch. So I'm disappointed regardless of injury, regardless of all of that. I do want to give him props for some of the other areas. This was his best game on the glass. He had a couple of really big defensive plays down the stretch, blocked Brunson, stripped Brunson on a couple of downhill drives. But also, as you mentioned, I feel like people are giving him a bit too much credit for what he did defensively because he had a couple of really big plays that were particularly clutch, and he deserves credit for that. But like down the stretch, Brunson was getting great looks out of pick and roll against Embiid for the most part, because when Embiid was playing up at the level of the screen, he was just dusting him downhill, getting all the way to the rim. And then when Embiid had to sit in a deeper drop, he was just stepping into pull-up threes and he was banging them. Even the block that Embiid had, New York retains possession because that ball goes out of bound. And then what does Embiid do? He gets beaten off the bounce and he commits a flagrant foul in like the last 50 seconds of a game. You can't do that. And by the way, just what a terrible look that's been for him. All of the dirty plays and flagrants throughout this series, like it just sucks, man. It sucks that it's the same old story and it's a rough game. And this is all about Maxey. This is all about Maxey stepping up and ascending, and that's awesome. I do want to give a shout out to Tobias Harris, who has been so bad throughout this series, but at least in this game, he came out more aggressive and he made some shots and he gives you 19. Kelly Oubre scores 8 points in the final few minutes of the fourth quarter and overtime. Now, none of those are self-created. He's in the right spot, in the dunker spot. He has a nice finish off of a handoff. He runs the floor hard in transition. He gets open off a cut out of an ATO. But at least the guy put the ball in the basket and he weaponized his athleticism because they needed somebody to step up other than Maxey when Embiid was playing like this.
Yeah, shout out to those guys. And shout out to Nick Batum for giving them some solid minutes too. Hits a couple shots in this one. I wanted to tack on, yeah, Carson, this is the third game in this series where Embiid has not scored a field goal from the field in the fourth quarter. Like, and I just wonder, like, how many opportunities, you know, we still have yet to see him fully healthy, but how many opportunities can we see him fail on the stage before we go, this is not a guy who is my number one on the stage. You know what I mean? He's not a guy who can carry a team through. Like, I'm going to wait to, you know, make that take until we see him fully healthy. But I'm going to reemphasize what we said earlier. It's like, these are things that happen regardless of if you're healthy or not. And if you're not going to consciously change the way you play or make better decisions, those are still major red flags, no matter how healthy or talented you are. And you need to be better at those things to win a title. Like, and they've given us such a concrete blueprint of how to disrupt him, dude. You're telling me that it's a double, Carson. It's a double, man. Mm-hmm. It's a really simple play in basketball. That's this guy's kryptonite. I don't know, man. It's really concerning about Embiid long-term and his prospects as a number one on a championship team. And with his health coupled in here, it just makes you wonder, man. I want to see Embiid fully healthy on this stage so we can get some real judgments and can see them at full health. On the flip side of this, this is a brutal loss for the Knicks, man. I mean, a heartbreaker. Personally, I could not ask for a better basketball environment to view this. Amazing. Like late game. Philly, New York at MSG. Rowdy crowd, two little guards trading buckets. Like, this is peak basketball, man. And the Knicks are up 6 with 26 seconds left, and they lose this thing, man. I kept saying it during the fourth quarter. The Knicks got to slam the door. You just got to finish this thing off. And you talk about how Philly could have won this game if they made a few more free throws. The Knicks leave a ton out there, especially late in this game. Overall, they shoot 16 of 24. They miss 8 free throws. Josh Hart goes 0-for-2 on a crucial trip to the line. Brunson goes 1-of-2 on a crucial trip to the line. Like, those are killers. And that's going to leave a really bad taste in the mouth of these guys when they head back to the locker room and, you know, sit with this tonight. Along with Tibbs. Like, I know Tibbs, man. He's a fundamental guy. Tibbs is a heart, you know, effort, energy, do the things the right way, and you lose on the free throw line. That's a tough way to go out. Sixers, and I felt like they had stolen all the momentum, man. The Sixers open up overtime on a 9-0 run. They outscore them 15-9 in the overtime period, and Maxey just steals their heart, dude. I don't want to pin this on Jalen Brunson. You know, I know he makes a bad play at the end there with Hartenstein. It's a double-edged sword, right? Brunson throws the ball in the way after jumping in the air, but Hartenstein is crashing on that play because he's going to get the rebound. That's his designated role in this offense. And Jalen Brunson was hot. You want your best player shooting in that scenario. Yeah. And he had been banging a ton of...
Inexcusable to pass out there. Inexcusable to pass out.
He's been banging all kinds of pull-up threes. And you see all the surrounding guys on New York. OG's crashing. Hart is crashing. Hartenstein is crashing. It's just... You can't do that there. And so I don't put that on Hardenstein, and I don't put too much of this loss on Brunson. I put it more on not finishing free throws and Sixers stealing it. Like, the only reason the Knicks were in this game was because of Jalen Brunson, man. He drops a 40-piece in this one, 6 assists, 4 of 11 from behind the arc, 15 of 32 from the field. He hit so many big shots. He kept getting downhill in this one, man. He's got back-to-back clutch possessions where he just blows by to the rim. He's got a tough clutch pull-up on Batum. He's got an amazingly clutch OT pull-up three. And he's got a late three to tie this one up. Like, Brunson was damn near perfect. It was just that one last possession where he really screws up. And the stark difference that I was so impressed with Brunson that maybe Embiid should take some notes on, Brunson dealt with every double his way so perfectly, and I didn't understand why Philadelphia kept throwing them at him. Like, every time he would back up so he could survey the floor when the Sixers would close in, and the help side guy on the wing would flash to the mid-range. Or he'd hit a guy from behind the arc, and they'd bang a three. Like, Josh Hart hits a three off of a double. Deuce McBride hits a three off a double. McBride hits a super clutch mid-range pull-up off of a double where – I'm just sitting there with Philadelphia going, guys, what's the process here? Brunson is going to pick this apart. Like, I would much rather deal with funneling Brunson downhill into Embiid and, you know, having him try to knock down a mid-range pull-up instead of just conceding open looks to these good role players for New York. But I thought he did a phenomenal job with dealing with double teams. Embiid's got to do that so much better. And shout out to some of these other guys, Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein dealing with Embiid. OG Anunoby played a phenomenal game, I felt, defensively. Deuce McBride had some big buckets, provided good defense. And Philly just stole this one, man. I love how that second quarter, Carson, how they responded. It was a slow start for the Knicks, man. I want to give the Knicks a ton of credit for this, too. That stretch of basketball, they open up 0 of 8 from this one. Not hitting anything. They're down 28 to 17, and they go up 35 to 28 in this one. Just an incredible run. 16-2 run, and some of the defense we saw in this stretch. The Knicks switch to a 2-3 zone, and it completely disrupts everything that Philadelphia is doing. Like, they just lose all control. Robinson gets a block, leads to a deuce three. Deuce forces a steal, gets an easy layup in transition. The Knicks just play so autonomously, and they play so connected at all times, man. It is my favorite thing about this Knicks team is how together they always play and how – they don't really need coaching, man. Every player knows what, you know what I mean, their role in the offense and what they're doing. It's, they don't need a ton of extra guidance. But I'm not putting a ton of this loss on Brunson, man. I know he makes a really bad play here. Brunson's been the best player for New York in this series, and I'm going to him every single play down the stretch. The only decision I thought he messed up on was not going up with that last shot. Also, you're hot, man. Just let it fly, Brunson. Get a little heat check, and if you don't hit it, see if you can get the rebound.
Yeah, that was really bad. That was totally inexcusable. But outside of that, he was their only consistent offensive punch throughout this game. And you're right. Like, specifically when they trapped him, he tended to handle it well. And there were a few spots where the guys around him stepped up and they knocked down their catch and shoot jumpers. But for the most part, the offensive supporting cast just did not deliver in this one. And that's obviously been the biggest concern with this Knicks team. It's, are you going to get enough from anybody other than Brunson? And it's been up and down on that front. I still think OG played really well offensively and gave you some nice self-created buckets, but it just wasn't good enough from the spot-up shooters. You're 28% from deep, and for once, you didn't dominate the hustle categories. You didn't dominate on the glass. Philly wins this game on the glass. Like, New York comes into this game averaging like more than 15 offensive rebounds per game. It's ridiculous. And so their offense hasn't been seamless and efficient. And even Brunson, as he's put up these monster numbers over the last few games, like, his efficiency hasn't been crazy. And in the first two games, it's been brutal. Like, them securing extra possessions has been absolutely pivotal, and they just aren't able to do that in this game. And ultimately, it's not like they had a bunch of glaring gaffes down the end of regulation. Like, obviously, you can't afford to miss free throws in the fourth quarter or overtime. But, like, Maxey made a couple of special shots, dude. You can't foul him on that four-point play. But I saw somebody be like, you got to run him off the line on the three that he hit to tie it. What line, my brother? He's at the logo. Like, what? There's no three-point line to be run off of. He's pulling from 35 feet. Like, when a guy makes that shot, you just kind of have to live with it. So, this is the reality of this series. Like, Philly has two potentially dominant offensive weapons. New York has one. And so Philly has the luxury that even if Embiid isn't his best, you have a guy who can be the best player on the floor. And that's what Tyrese Maxey was in this game. And that's why the ceiling for Philly has always been higher. That's why Philly punch New York can't compete with. And Philly didn't throw their best punch in this one, but New York didn't either. So this remains a really, really competitive series. It's really interesting to me. I think these two teams are very even. All of these games have been so competitive, but obviously you have to be kicking yourselves if you're the Knicks, because you gave the team that does have more star power a chance to now go back and win on their home floor. And you probably are going to get a better Embiid. Like, it hasn't been a pretty series from him, but he's probably going to be better than he was in this one. And I do want to be clear, like, he is still very impactful defensively just with his raw size. And he made some really good plays. And on the glass, he was really good. But on the other side, God, it's just, when you think about the decision-making, he's 30 years old, and he's been through this rodeo so many times of teams just embarrassing him as a decision-maker in the playoffs. That's where we just need him be better.
Embiid also, though, I mean, Embiid has played less ball than a lot of these guys, too. You know, he got a late start in his career, and I don't know, relative to, I'm not bailing the guy out. He has played enough, but he's also missed a lot of time in comparison. I'm not cutting the guy slack. He should be a lot better, like, you'd figure he'd learn by now. I do want to ask you one final thing on Knicks Sixers. Do you think the Knicks should have fouled late game? Like, is that something that you turn to? Like, when you're up three, do you foul them and just send them to the line? Do you think that's a better late game strategy in that scenario?
Yeah, I'm generally a proponent of foul up three, even though I think it sucks. When you have ample time on the clock, like I remember when Chet hit that game winner or game tire against the Warriors, and everybody was like, you got to foul. And it's like, well, there's a second on the clock. Like, if a guy's going to catch and immediately fire, you can't intentionally foul. But in this situation, I think there was enough time. But as I recall, he got down court pretty quickly. He was moving pretty fast, got into that high screen, and then he just pulled. So there's not a perfect answer. Like, most dudes just aren't going to make that shot. Maxey was just in a crazy rhythm. He made the shot.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's what I think was so great about that shot. Nobody expected him to take it. You know, the defense is getting set up for him to, you know, get somewhere closer to the three-point line, and that just caught him off guard. Maxey's special, man. Maxey is so, so special. That was awesome. He's had such a good series, man. I'm glad it's validating a lot. I do trust him, man. I trust him as that second guy on a great team. He has ascended. He's come – he was great when he entered the league, man, but he's come so far, too. And other areas like ball handling, playmaking in this one, too, man, I don't want that to get lost. He had some good passes in this one, too. Mm-hmm. Maxey's the total package, man, and it's been a lot of fun watching him realize all these skills, dude. He's a special player.
Yeah, he's been awesome. Do you think Philly has a real chance to win this series in seven?
Yes, of course. When I think when there's an offensive skill gap like this between these two teams, I definitely think there's a chance. And it's going to be this entire series, every fourth quarter has been so close. Like, it's really going to be about which team. I think the Sixers and Knicks are so evenly matched. It's really going to be about what team executes better in the fourth quarter and down the stretch. It has been every single time, man. And two of these games swing the opposite direction than they should have. I think it's just so so appropriate, man. The basketball gods, the Knicks steal when the Sixers should have won. The Sixers steal when the Knicks should have won. I do, because I think it is going to be neck and neck every single game in the series heading into the fourth quarter. And can the Sixers outplay him on the biggest stage? And the beauty is that Embiid has played so poorly in the fourth quarter of all of these games that if you can just get him to an average level in the fourth quarter, or good Embiid, you don't even need great Embiid, it feels like. If you can get that guy in the fourth quarter, I definitely give the Sixers a shot, man. It's just impressive that they're here with Embiid playing this poorly, man. I 100% give them a shot.
They have a shot. Just because they have more high-end talent, I still wouldn't pick it. I would say that it's probably Knicks in seven. It feels like Philly should be able to hold down their home court. And I still think, like, there's a reason that New York is up 3-2. Of course, some of this has just been, like, the craziness of all of these games. But now, both of these teams have basically choked one away, right? They both have one legitimately improbable late-game comeback. I still believe in the depth of quality players on this Knicks team. I still believe in the spot-up shooting. I don't believe in the offensive creation outside of Brunson, but I do believe those guys can and will shoot a lot better than they did in this game, and they have over the course of this series. I do still believe overall in that advantage that they have on the glass, and it's just been so spotty from Philly outside of Maxey and Embiid. Like, Oubre has stepped up in these last couple games, and he's been awesome defensively throughout this series, but early he was a non-factor offensively. Tobias Harris has mostly been a non-factor offensively. New York just has more guys who I trust, and I do believe Brunson can be the best player on the floor, and in one of these two games probably will be the best player on the floor, and I think that's a formula that's gotten them here, and that's a formula that they need. Last thing, dude, before we move on from this game, Campaign got in a skirmish. I can't remember who it was with. I think it was with Brunson. And I just thought to myself, Campaign must get hit with the most vicious trash talk, bro. You know, like if you piss somebody off in your Campaign, they probably look at you and they say, you're so conventionally handsome. Your jump shot is so aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I imagine they would say to him.
I
think I'm going to refrain from what I was actually going to say about Campaign, man.
All right, take it easy on him. He's been good this series. He's given him little sparks of
offense. He had a game. He had a game.
I'm not talking about today. I'm talking about in this series. He's had some good moments. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to talk some Cavs magic. That was a fun game. And I guess we'll shit on the Indiana Pacers after some quick words from DraftKings.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code NERDS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code NERDS only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Evan Mobley, Logan, had a heroic moment in this game. Game-winning block for the Cavs. So they hold on without Jared Allen in this game. They're up 3-2 after two horrible games in Orlando. And despite Paolo going crazy in this one, what do you take away from this win for Cleveland?
I still believe Cleveland's advantage in perimeter creators gives them such an easier route every single game to offensive creation. Like, I know Mitchell and Garland have their games where their liabilities defensively and they're not creating anything offensively, but if either of these guys get hot for stretches, they can just carry an offense the way nobody for Orlando can. And I know Paolo balls out in this game, and I'm going to get into that. Like, I liked a lot of what I saw from Paolo. It wasn't perfect, but Paolo played a really good game. But just Mitchell's consistent downhill pressure, especially in this one, you know, he shoots 10 free throws in the second half, gives you an easy avenue for offense late when stuff is stagnant and you're not hitting jump shots. And, you know, that's Cleveland's tendency. Darius Garland has a good stretch in this one. I believe he had 17 first half points in the second half, gets to the bucket a few crucial times, is playmaking pretty well. Like, they're just the two best guards in this series. And if you can get a couple of good stretches from those guys a game, it should be enough to beat Orlando. Like, Orlando is just going to struggle and scratch and claw for all of their buckets, man. Nothing's easy. Like, their guards are just nowhere close to on the level of these two guys. So while Mitchell has a pretty poor shooting performance, while, Garland, maybe his numbers don't pop off the stat sheet at you, like, they're still better. And they set up guys for a lot of easy shots. Mobley is in the right position on a few of those drives, finishes off some easy dunks for them. And that's going to be enough to beat Orlando, man. Like, it is. And I thought that Orlando could steal this one a little bit. I thought their offense got a little stale towards the end. It was a lot of just Paolo settling for jumpers. But, I mean, that was working, dude. And you're going to trust the hot hand when he's had a game like that. But I was impressed, especially – it's so weird with Cleveland, man. When they put the shooters out there, like, dude, Morris is banging threes in this one. Morris is giving you impactful bench minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so weird, man, is sometimes they can try out these weird, like, Strus hit some big shots in this one. It's so strange, man. Like, I think you got to ride the hot hands if you're Cleveland too, dude, whoever's hitting threes, and they always need a floor spacer or somebody out there
So one thing that was evident about this one too, dude, is no Jared Allen, but you still got two more shooters out there. It's a little more spaced out. I still wonder about their fit long-term and stuff like that. None of those concerns have gone anywhere, but I still believe Cleveland has a really drastic offensive creation advantage, and that's going to win out, man. I want more consistent Garland, and I want more consistent Mitchell, but these two guys are so far clearly the best offensive players in this series.
Well, they're not clearly the two best. I mean, Paolo is playing about 18 times better than Darius Garland, if I had to put a number on it. Garland had a good quarter, bro. He had a 17-point quarter. I was exhilarated. Finally, we saw Darius Garland. He was knocking down his pull-up jumpers. Garland is just inconsistent even throughout this game. He's been so bad throughout this series. I don't want to make it out to be like, oh, Darius Garland has been so good. And Donovan Mitchell hasn't been good in this series. Like, they both had moments. It's been a rock fight, ugly series. But ultimately, I thought the offensive skill advantage would be more pronounced. I thought Donovan Mitchell would be the best dude out there by the most. And he's just had some rough moments, and he's dealing with the knee thing. So I don't really blame him as much as I do Garland for just being outright not very good. But the Cav, who I think deserves the most props, the Cav, who ultimately was the most important, in my opinion. What are they saying in the chat that's got you jiggling so much? Yeah, Darius Garland. Nerd, jiggling instead of giggling?
Nerd Sesh is scripted, man. That got me, bro.
Yeah, sadly true. Mobley really came through in this one on the defensive side, dude. Now, there was still some rough offensive moments, some cringeworthy offensive moments almost, some rough missed finishes. He gets stripped a couple times. But in the last couple minutes, he finishes around the rim, which is really all you can ask of him at this point without Jared Allen out there. They just need somebody on the interior who they can dump the ball off to, and he'll go up there and finish. And my favorite thing was he decisively dunked the basketball. He didn't leave it up to his suspect touch. But that one came off of a Max Strus, Marcus Morris pick and roll. And this was in the last 90 seconds of the game. And that's where you're just like, Cleveland, what the hell is going on offensively? Like, they are such a weird team, dude. Garland and Mitchell don't touch the ball. Turns into Strus, Marcus Morris pick and roll with Mobley in the dunker spot. But really, he stands out on the defensive end, of course. And the game-saving block on Franz was incredible. The recovery, it's that agility to me, the ability to close gaps like that, and the ability to stick with these big wings in space on drives that's so special, because he also took on the Paolo matchup in the last couple minutes. And Paolo just had such a size advantage over the primary defenders on him throughout this game. And we've seen the wings hold up against him in stretches, but we've also seen Cleveland able to put Mobley on him in stretches and Allen on him in stretches. And for the most part in this game, that wasn't the case, because you needed Mobley holding things down as the five, as your lone real interior defender. But he took on Paolo and he forced him into three tough shots, because it's just really tough to score against Evan Mobley's length when he can also move so well in space. And that switchability is always going to make him one of the best defenders on the planet. That ability to take on wing matchups and legitimately be the best option, but then also to be this great rim protector, phenomenal. He has four stocks in this game and he held down the glass. So Evan Mobley, again, it wasn't the prettiest game. It's not ever going to be from him offensively, but just demonstrating that defensive value, stepping up when they desperately needed him as like the lone actual big. I mean, you get Tristan Thompson minutes in this game, dude. It was getting dark out there for the Cavs, and Mobley came through and they gutted out this win. Every game in this series is going to be ugly, and for the most part, it's going to be tough. And whenever you can escape with a win when you're struggling offensively in the playoffs, that's an impressive thing to achieve. And Mobley was really important to Cleveland doing that.
He was. There were a lot of possessions late where Paolo's going at him. And I thought Paolo played a really awesome game, especially when nobody else in Orlando some games feels like they can hit a shot. The Orlando Magic outside of Paolo Banchero in this game, Carson, they shoot 5 of 24 from behind the arc. Shout out, dude. Orlando, man. Like, it's really, really ugly sometimes. And that's where, you know, I can't really take issue with Paolo going too ISO heavy down the stretch. Like, he's got the hot hand. None of your other guys are shooting shots. Like, just put up every look. And that's what was really impressive, is it's like the defense knows exactly what Paolo's going to do. And sometimes it's, you can't stop me. 39 points, 8 boards, 4 assists on 14 of 24 shooting, 4 of 7 from deep. He gets to the line 8 times, knocked down 7 shots. I was mentioning this early before Carson rejoined us. We had Logan Sesh for a little bit. I'll get back into it. He's got a clutch turnaround midi in this one, man. He's got another one on Mobley where he drives him into him, baits him into leaping, draws those free throws, bangs both of them. He hits another nice pull-up J on Mitchell. That's a possession where I'm like, damn, man, he should be able to overpower Donovan for an easy look at the basket, but he also knows I got great touch and I can just shoot over him, and he just bangs that shot. There were some other possessions that frustrated me about Paolo down the stretch, but again, nobody else was cooking, so I'm not going to get on him too much.
Yeah.
Right after that turnaround midi, he airballs the three, and then he fails to close out on Morris, leads to an easy three for them. There's another one where he gets downhill, forces a ball to Max, or forces a ball on the baseline, turnover to Max Strus. There's a nice catch and shoot three off a pick and pop with Franzo, which I liked. There's another possession where he over dribbles a little bit. He doesn't create anything on Mobley. Mobley walls him up. And then Franz, of course, has to take a really deep three. And then he misses an off the dribble three early in the shot clock. But I think Vaccaro can lean on other guys when he's got the personnel. Like, it was just hellish out there tonight. Franz wasn't pulling his weight. Franz goes 3 of 11 from the field, 1 of 6 from deep, gives you 14 points. And some of the shot making, man, like Gary Harris isn't hitting anything. Suggs, he goes 0 of 5 from deep. Fultz can't space the floor. Cole Anthony has been atrocious in this series. Paolo needs some offensive help, man. He needs some offensive help, especially like a guard that can just reliably make a shot, man, or somebody that he can run a pick and roll with that isn't Franz, that is a legitimate threat out of the pick and roll. So that's where I was really impressed with him, man, is Paolo has this skill set, and that's why I'm so confident in him as a star too. He wants the ball in these big moments too, dude. Like, he's not afraid to take these tough shots, and for the most part, he's really good at them. Like, I think Paolo is a special shooter of the basketball. The percentages may not reflect it, but I think he's a really good shooter.
He's had a really good series. He's had an exceptionally good series.
Well, I just mean that the caliber and the difficulty of the shots that Paolo take factor so much into his percentages on the whole. Like, I think that if he was taking higher quality looks, like, his numbers would just be way higher. It's mostly due to the shot diet. I think Paolo's awesome. I think Paolo is a future star in this league. He's already almost there. Like, I think he is a face of this league to come, and I think he's going to get so much better. Like, even seeing a guy this young, this fresh into his career, doing this in a big stage in the fourth quarter was super impressive. And he even hits that three at the buzzer, too. I know it's meaningless because you're going to lose, but still, like, if there was time on the clock, you know, it cuts it to one. Paolo's awesome, man. He needs some freaking help, dude. Can we get this guy some competent offensive basketball players? Please, Orlando, please.
No. Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. Franz obviously had one awesome game. Game 4, he was so great. But outside of that, he's been underwhelming. I've been impressed by Paolo, though, because this was obviously going to be a huge test for him, going up against a team with this combination of excellent defenders built to challenge him, strong big wings, two versatile bigs who can both handle him as a primary matchup, but then also are going to be great in help, and they're going to force you to try to beat them with playmaking and have your spot up shooters knock down shots. And Paolo has had to resort to a lot of tough shot making because this is a tough matchup, but he's come through, dude. Like, this has been impressive to me. He's averaging 25, 7, and 4.5 on 56% true shooting. Of course, that's not like good scoring efficiency, but in the context of this series, it's actually slightly better than his regular season efficiency. And to do that with all of the offensive struggles around him against this defense, just in the playoffs period and your first playoff run, like, I'm impressed by that. And yes, it's been inconsistent and there's been rough showings and the turnovers have been a problem. He's averaging almost 5 a game. But to have two performances like he did in games 3 and 5 alone against this defense, like, it's just ridiculous, bro. I mean, the turnarounds, the step backs, the off balance, tough shot making, so, so impressive. He's confidently stepping into threes in this game, both pull-ups and off the catch, which is so important. Like, as we get the best version of Paolo, I think it's going to be less tough stuff out of the mid-range, and it's going to be more about good looks from deep, and it's going to be maximizing those looks around the rim. And he'll always have some of that in-between game, which is great. But he's very, very reliant on it right now. But I'm not going to say anything critical about Paolo. Yeah, he missed some tough shots down the late. Him making a bunch of tough shots was also the only reason that Orlando had a chance in this game. So it's very impressive to me for his first playoff run. Yes, he still has to refine his decision-making and get easier shots for himself down the line and become a more efficient offensive hub. But he's played better than I expected him to in this run. He's overachieved expectations. And ultimately, like, a lot of this series has just come down to whose supporting cast is capable offensively, who can make a spot up jumper. And Orlando was off to like one of the worst shooting series that we've seen through the first couple games. And then games 3 and 4, right, you get Suggs and Isaac, like the supporting cast starts knocking down shots. And in this game, they can't. And in this game, the Cavs shoot well enough. Max Strus makes some big shots. Like, that's the difference in these Rock fights. So I give props to Paolo for keeping his team in this game. They are obviously very limited offensively. And I do also want to give props to Cleveland just for responding. It was so funny. JB Bickerstaff said after last game that they had spent the last couple of days, quote, identifying things. That's what he said. Profound, promising stuff. But I guess they identified some things. They took better care of the ball in this game, and they didn't have like a disastrous stretch like they did in both games 3 and 4, where they just let up these devastating runs. And it's like, there's no coming back from that, especially game 4. They kept their head screwed on. They battled on the glass. They didn't give you a bunch of easy buckets in transition. And when they're able to check those boxes, they should win because they are the more talented team. But doing without Allen was impressive because Allen has been their second best player pretty clearly in this series. And Mobley stepped up to the challenge in this one. All right.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's quickly talk Bucks Pacers, dude. Dame and Giannis both not out there. The Bucks win by 23 points. What does this say about the Pacers?
That boy Bobby Portis.
Shout out Crazy Eyes.
God, I love Bobby Portis, man. You know, I think we should take some big notes from this. Trade Giannis, trade Dame. We're going all in on Bobby Portis leading the offense, man. Oh. Has there ever been a better offensive action than a Bobby Portis, like, elbow touch or post touch?
No.
It's the most efficient action in basketball, man. And Bobby Portis did his thing tonight. Big shout out to these guys stepping up, but Indiana, like, guys, you couldn't have got this thing gift wrapped to you better, man.
Yeah.
No Giannis, no Dame, and just ugly, dude. Everybody's missing shots in this one. The effort is just weak. Like, that was what I was really impressed with Milwaukee is they cranked up the effort. They dialed up the aggression, like the energy. The vets, like, took over in this one, man. They played Indiana a lot more physical. And the thing that I was most impressed with Milwaukee is, you know, they were going to have to play this game differently. You can't go with the regular recipe where it's Damian Lillard leading your offense or, you know, it's, you know, Giannis, you don't have either of those guys. You got to completely change the style of basketball that you're playing. And I thought they slowed the pace down really well in this one. They upped the defensive aggression. This is the best defense I've seen Milwaukee play
you know, all series, honestly, man. And it was with no Dame, no Giannis, which is kind of crazy. Pat Bev played a good defensive game. He also served them buckets in the second quarter. You know, Bobby Portis, I thought, did well defensively. Brooke Lopez, they slowed down the pace. They made Indiana play their game. But, like, dude, I was just so disappointed with Indiana. Bro, this is a game where you should just run. It shouldn't have been a contest. You wipe them off the floor. And, ironically, like the Knicks do with Philly, you are giving life to a team that should be devoid of any. You know, this is a game where you got to slam the door. You got to crush their soul. You got to finish it off. And now, oh, man, there's a little magic. It's a little, you know, there's a little something there. Can we get a little?
Can we get a little run going? Giannis was warming up on the court. Like, he didn't play, obviously, but he's getting closer and closer. You're buying more time.
Exactly. And that's what you don't want to do to this team. You don't want to give them any life. And I was just disappointed that they didn't close the door. I thought, poor effort all around. I was really disappointed, just especially defensively too, man. And big shout out to the boy, Bobby Portis, man, playing physical big boy basketball with these guys, man. Bobby Portis is the man.
Yeah, dude, I got to give a shout out to both Bobby Portis and what Chris Middleton has done this entire series is outstanding. I mean, both these dudes are just tough shot makers. And like, if they have a size advantage, they'll go over top of you and they'll just beat you with those turnarounds. And all the mid-range shot making has been super impressive from them. Shout out Malik Beasley. He was banging threes in this game and he made several really high effort plays defensively. Pat Bev plays a good game in this one. He also hits the zestiest too small celebration that I've ever seen, bro. That was so funny. Popped the hand on the hip and then like swiped the floor damn near. It was pretty impressive. It seemed like he'd been practicing it. But this is all about Indiana. Like, this is, as you said, a gift-wrapped opportunity. You're up 3-1. I get that you're on the road. Boo-hoo, bro. Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo are not on the floor. You're the number two offense in basketball this year. You have Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton. Like, just based on those facts alone, you should be able to pull out a game like this. And it's just bad from everybody. And the effort and the lack of urgency to me. This was just such an uninspired basketball team. Like, again, Malik Beasley is jumping passing lanes. He is scrapping with Pascal Siakam for post position. Like, the Bucks are making you work, and they just looked apathetic. Andrew Nembhard just letting the ball bounce out to him. They're not attacking the offensive glass nearly the way that they did in game four, which, like, was pivotal to them pulling that one out. This Indiana team just isn't very good. And if they had drawn anybody other than the Bucks, first of all, down Giannis, and now down Dame as well, like, they would have been bounced. And the level that they're defending at just isn't nearly good enough to win in these playoff environments. I really like Spicy P and Hallie. Neither of them are particularly good in this one. I think both need to be more aggressive, especially Siakam. He just has to get more touches in that post area where he's been such a devastating mismatch attacker all year. They weren't up to the task. And if Giannis comes back, like, I don't know that we can expect that, especially if Dame isn't back out there. But again, you've breathed life into this team. You have to close them out, because guess what? With Dame and Giannis out there, they are better than you. They are better than you. And you have an opportunity to win a playoff series. And regardless of the circumstances, like, that's an accomplishment. That's something to build off of. That's something you take home with you. And who knows what could happen? God forbid Jalen Brunson could get hurt. God forbid Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey could both get hurt. Like, it would take a lot to open the door. Indiana would be a heavy, heavy underdog against either of those teams. But it's just so disappointing to me that they didn't seem to understand the gravity of this opportunity.
Yeah, you got to capitalize on it, man. You never know what's going to happen. And there wasn't a urgency. It was like, oh, okay, well, we're up 3-1, so who cares anyway? You know, when the Bucks are playing, like, they got nothing else, because they don't. This is their season. Like, you got to match that same intensity, man. Big shout out to Pat Bev, also, like, playmaking in this game. He notched just 12 assists. He looked like a teapot doing that thing, man. You know, like I'm a little
short and stout.
Yeah, that's what Pat Bev looked like doing that.
Yeah.
This is an embarrassing loss for Indiana, man, and lack of heart. The one thing I want to ask you, I mean, are they just this much better without Dame defensively? Like, is that a takeaway? Are they better when the pace is slowed down? Can you make any big picture kind of, or is this just, you know, Indiana kind of taking their foot off the gas? What do you think?
I think both of those things are true. I certainly don't think that the defensive edge that they have without Dame on the floor offsets the offensive edge with him out there. That goes without saying. And they played desperate. they play desperate, and that's a real thing, right? If the other team plays desperate and they're down a star or two and their back is against the wall, like, it's not uncommon that if you come in unprepared, that you just kind of get smacked in the mouth and you end up losing that game. And that's what happened to Indiana in this one. And they're absolutely better when they can slow down the pace. I mean, they have old dudes who like to grind it down with these half-court buckets out of the post. It's very, very different from the up-tempo style that Indiana likes to play. But this is just bad from the Pacers. That's really all there is to say. And it's been a super underwhelming series. Like, you get blown out in game one without Giannis on the floor. You still have to scrap and claw to win game three, right? Like, there hasn't been a game where they've just totally outclassed Milwaukee, even game four, when Dame and Giannis, neither of them were on the floor. It's just been disappointing. I thought that this team had a higher ceiling than they've shown after the Siakam trade. I still love Siakam, and I love the fit. The reality is just that they don't defend it at nearly a high enough level to succeed in these playoff environments. All right, Logan, before we get out of here, before you say your closing line, you see that Kendrick diss track today, Euphoria? You got any thoughts on it?
I thought it was a little goofy, honestly.
Oh, the toddler flow. You didn't like the toddler flow.
I mean, I'm not really super invested in this beef anyway.
You don't know nothing about that.
You listen like to Kendrick that. Andrick. I think they're going to drop more, though. I think Kendrick's coming with more, man.
Yeah. Well, he kind of hinted at that with the back-to-back. Shout out Too Much Sauce. Appreciate you in the chat. Here's what I'll say. Since we got a little time to kill here, why not? This is a bit of a slow night around the association. I thought Kendrick had some bars for him in the second half, bro. I thought he had some bars for him. The ghost riding bars were good. The bot abs. That's just crazy to me that Drake bought abs. That's such a bad look. But I'm with you, dude.
Is that real?
Yes, that's real. He bought abs.
What does that mean, bro? Go to the gym.
Yeah, bro, talk to him. That's not his vibe. There was a lot of good stuff in there. But I'm with you, dude. And you know what? I'm going to continue to hold Kendrick accountable because I think he's a great lyricist. And I think, again, he had some haymakers that he threw. But he gets a pass for some of the weird stuff that he does. And you know what? You know what any Kendrick stan is going to say, Logan, when we say, oh, it's kind of weird when he talks like a little baby, when he starts talking like a fucking freak. They're going to say, well, there's 45 layers to that. And there's a million different incredibly significant things that go into that flow that you couldn't possibly understand. You plebeian, you troglodyte. And that's just kind of like the vibe. It's like everything he does is genius no matter what. And it's like, a pretty big part of music is that it sounds good. And that shit doesn't sound good to me.
That's exactly what I was going to say is, you know, I like a lot of Kendrick's music, but to me, the biggest thing is if it's sonically pleasing. Like, can I mob to it? Like, man, they mentioned it in our in the Discord today, which you guys can actually join at the link in our bio.
Hey, a little early with that, but don't jump the gun.
Sorry. But they mentioned it in there today in the Discord that somebody mentioned the story Adidon by Pusha T. And like, even that, bro, like super sonically pleasing, like Ether by Nas, you know, super sonically pleasing where you can go back and like listen to it. And it's, you know, like, who shot you? You know what? Like all these are like super sonically pleasing. I'm not going to go back and listen to this because I'm not like, man, this is fun to listen to.
There's just stretches, bro. There's stretches, you know? And the, you don't know nothing about that. And he's just repeating it. And it's like, bro, that's annoying. Like, that's legitimately annoying to listen to. Like, he laid a crazy bar down on him, bro. He said, you don't know anything about fatherhood. That's a fantastic Drake diss. It will be until the end of time. And then he follows it up with just repeating, you don't know nothing about that. That's my take on it. I thought Kendrick got him, but I also thought, like, it wasn't perfect. And then you just see everybody, bro, and they act like it's the single greatest thing that they've ever heard. Like, bro, the story of Adidon, like, that's the best diss track ever. No, nobody's ever going to top that shit.
Actually, there's 45 right. layers for you to understand that.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Two guys with a podcast talking about a rap beef. That's what we do here. But I have my experience in this field, of course, having gone through this with the Stay Hot guys. And as a diss track auteur, frankly, I could have blown what both these guys did out of the water. So we'll end on that note. Logan, any final words?
Nas Reed.
We'll be back tomorrow night talking Mavs Clippers. That should be fun. If you guys want more Nerd Sesh content, you can always catch all of our shows post-game at the Nerd Sesh YouTube channel. You can listen to the podcasts across audio platforms. You can Also find on our YouTube channel video essays, video breakdowns that we do going in depth on a lot of these NBA topics. I'm going to have one tomorrow that you guys can stay tuned in for. You can follow us across social to see our trivia content, TikTok, Instagram at NerdSesh, Twitter at Nerd_Sesh. And as Logan mentioned, you can join the Discord and you can get our merch at thevolume.com. So with that, as always, appreciate you guys. I've been Carson Brabber.
I have been Logan Camden.
And this was NerdSesh.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.